So as we said, Mary is going to be speaking on step two, which is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So Mary, we invite you up here.
Hello, Zoomers. Nice to see you all. So, yes, step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Oh, hi everyone, I'm an alcoholic and my name's Mary. My sobriety date is January 2nd of 1997. My home group is the Lovely Ladies, Friday night, 7:30 at 10th and Powell. Great meeting. If you haven't been there, come visit us. So now this step about this power that we needed and restoring to sanity. Well, I was a no-go from the very beginning. Sanity was not part of what I got in line for wherever I came from, the same as my sense of humor. My husband has always reminded me that I have none. I love it in the 12 and 12, though. I kind of had to do my homework. You know, that's what the gift of this particular sharing at this particular meeting does for you. It gets you, you know, like I said last week, deep diving into these steps. And in the 12 and 12, it says, first, Alcoholics Anonymous does not demand that you believe in anything. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad. All of its 12 steps are but suggestions. And all you really need is a truly open mind. And I just was impressed with how gentle and kind and respectful that is. So my take on it early on was, then I really don't need a power greater than myself. Because, you know, it gave me an out. And it is always just a suggestion that you can get a person, a personally choose your own higher power. As long, this is the fine print, as long as you are relieved of that job description. Last week, we studied the spiritual virtue of honesty, about surrendering honestly in step one, and how in our powerlessness, I failed to drink as a normal person. Is there such a thing as a normal person drinking? I don't know one. But in We Agnostics, we're reminded that our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. And I love that it further admits, well, that's exactly what this book is all about. The beloved big book, our text, our Bible, our how-to, our steps for dummies, you know, steps for people who are stubborn. What it has is that 164 pages on hints, suggestions, examples of how we're going to be saved from this hopeless, this seemingly hopeless way of life. That's where step two's virtue of the weak lies, in the hope and the faith that a higher power or something that has power greater than ourselves can save us from ourselves. Hope. It's a noun, and it means a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen. A feeling of trust. I hope that the sun comes out tomorrow. Have no control over it. It is just something that I would love to have happen, which lately it has. Sanity, meaning the ability to think and behave in a manner, in a normal and rational manner. Sound mental health. Also, when I've worked the steps, as I've done a whole lot of times, that the steps we took, it refers to sanity as wholeness. I like that idea. But if you're like me, I never felt whole, not any time in my young life, my middle life, my older life. And as we put it together, as it always was, I was always floundering, directionless. I was flying by the seat of my pants. I was out of control. A lot of the time, when I would put crazy, I would put alcohol into any situation, as on January 1st of 1997. Here we are in the brand new year, and I have a house full of family, most of which I'm not really happy with at the time. And I just start drinking. Even though I'd been around this program for a couple of years, I thought that was a coping mechanism that I could handle. And then what happened? Total, utter chaos. I was pretty out of it, so I hardly remember, other than I just knew it had not been good. But other people could drink without getting stupid, and I was damn determined that I was going to keep trying. But it never worked. I didn't understand the gravity of the problem. I was desperate for that hope that something was going to give me a solution to trying to be normal and sane and happy. And I was not happy, nor did I believe that just having this power, whatever it was, greater than myself, was going to help me feel whole and or connected. Remember last week that I shared that I was 10 years old when my addiction began. And at that age, I had absolutely no rationale for what sane living was like, or how to make moral choices, correct decisions, choices of any kind. I was a chameleon. I blended into my environment. I became a mimic of the people that I was around, my family, my friends, my parents. I saw what they were doing, and I saw that they were continuing to go on. I rarely saw the bad parts of that, but I saw the drinking, I saw the partying, but nothing bad happened. Little did I know about all the former parties that the police had been called on. But I adopted some of those coping mechanisms. And so because I was seeing that, I remember one time in my very young mind thinking, well, my mom was always pretty nice after she'd had this funny drink. And she called it a whiskey and water, a VO and water. And so I remember being in the house by myself and trying it. And I drank half a glass. Of course, I probably didn't have enough water in there. VO and water. And every swallow was just a jolt to my psyche. And I remember thinking, how can anybody enjoy drinking this? I was sick. I was sick. I was at a very young age. And I had no basis for living. The fact is that a truly sick mind cannot heal itself. In fact, many times it cannot even see what's wrong. Self-knowledge cannot keep us sober, nor does it guarantee our sanity. Knowing and admitting lack of power in trying to cope with our own problems, that's the integral basis for steps 1 and 2. In the big book and the 12 and 12, there is an in-depth discussion about those who struggle with finding a higher power, believing, surrendering to. And I understand that dilemma. I have sponsored women who have struggled with that idea of a power greater than themselves. What do you do? All I could do was pray and implore them to have an open mind. Have an open mind and be willing. And continue to work the program. Show up, do service, do the things that are today are keeping you sober so that your higher power may dawn upon you in whatever form. I believe in the seeking, the looking for, and the desperacy for a power greater than ourselves. You don't have to find it, because I truly believe that he will find that person in their willingness, that state of surrender. Step one, I can't. Step two, he can. It can. This week, I got thinking about that story that I shared with all of you last week about Fiona. And I hadn't thought about Fiona in a really long time. And I remember being in the basement. I remember all about where I was. I remember finding that shoebox, and I found a piece of material. Purple, of course. Is there any other color? And I gently laid her in there, and I patted her all around. I found cotton, and I put cotton over her, and I tucked her up and in. And while I was doing that, it was quite a meditation through my incredible hangover, but it was a meditation that I know was spirited by that God of my understanding, because while I was doing that simple job of getting this guinea pig ready to bury, I thought, wow, I am feeling so absolutely awful. I need to call my sponsor. Now remember, I had put her up on a shelf 4 months before, and I hadn't even considered thinking about reaching out. But in that moment, I remember, I'm going to call my sponsor. And because I can't do this myself, I am really absolutely at the bottom of my own barrel. I am desperate. And that's what I did. I called her. She took me to a meeting. Wow, novel idea. I believe this process of willingness for searching, finding, and experiencing is absolutely a personal journey, as mine was, spurred on by Fiona. The hope that step two offers us beckons us to trust something that we can't see, feel, hear, smell, taste. It's a spirit. But because we want it and are absolutely desperate for something different to happen than what we've been in the middle of, this hole that we're down in looking up, because I'd abandoned hope, I'd abandoned my health, I'd abandoned my family, I'd abandoned any thoughts of my future. I didn't care at this point. And like some of us, they've abandoned the hope of a life and their lives. When we ask for that higher power, it then gives us that ability to get out of the way, to choose peace, to help others, to genuinely love, which, like for me, I don't think I had ever loved up till this program impacted me. I was married 14 years. I had 3 children. I had made my husband my God. I had made my children my God, and it had not kept me away from my addiction. I was still absolutely broken, desperate. I didn't really know what it was like to love anything outside of myself, much less something I couldn't grasp. Hope comes down to faith. When I'm in a place of hope, I let go and I have faith and trust in that entity that I want to believe is there. And for years, I did know what my problem was. I couldn't drink without hurting myself or others. If I had one glass, it was only because that's maybe all there was. It was never a choice to not hurt myself with alcohol. I was a fraud. As I was a chameleon and a mimic, I knew that I wasn't being true to myself. I knew that. My father used to watch certain programs and rail at them. Ah, he's just a fraud. He's a fraud. He's a doggone fraud. And I knew what that meant down deep. I knew that that was bad, that it was unacceptable, that it was probably sinful, that it was, and I never could have imagined that I would be like that. But for 37 years, 27, from beginning to the end of addiction, I didn't know me, didn't ask the right questions to find out. I was lost. When I think about being a fraud, I think about when I had my two girls in Catholic school. I was a stay-at-home mom. And I thought that my job would be to become totally involved in my children's education. I was involved in all kinds of school projects and fundraisers. I held most of the positions in PTC. I ran a Santa Stop and Shop for like 8 years, which took about 9 months from start to finish. I was gonna do it, you know. I showed up to serve lunches 3 times a week. I celebrated my girls going through First Reconciliation and First Communion. I was a lector in church, a Eucharistic minister, and I had been nominated and accepted onto parish council 2 different times. And here I am, knowing that at night I can go home and reward myself by numbing out, because I deserved it. I was of service to so many people in so many places. Occasionally I got that conscience. I'd hear my father's voice, "Fraud! Just a fraud!" And I would have that feeling that deep down my cheating and my fraudulent behavior was going to catch up with me. But I was also pleased a lot of the time that I was keeping it together. I was showing up. I was sobering up. I was going and doing it all over again, in spite of my self-deceit. I also was quite often verbally and physically abusive to those closest to me. I had very little patience for interruptions, distractions, or anyone else's ideas. I was the epitome of selfish and self-seeking. I now know what that behavior was called. I just thought it was being Mary. I remember this one time. The details are fuzzy, of course. They were fuzzy. My husband and I were having an argument at our back door. I'm at the top of the stairs and he's at the bottom of the stairs. And I just remember getting so livid. I looked around for a weapon and I found a hairbrush. And I flung it down the stairs at him and I just missed him. And I was, that increased my rage. It increased to the point where I picked up a 20-pound bag of dog food and I threw it down the stairs at him. I remember finishing off with some not nice words and then leaving, feeling justified. He deserved that. He deserved that because he pissed me off. Who does that? And believe it or not, I was not under the influence. I was not. I hadn't been under the influence. That was just a normal reaction to frustration and life. So I found what the problem was when I started to work step one. And then, can't you imagine my disappointment at step two to find out that I had to find some form of God to try to save myself? That God whom I had hidden from and I had denied that I was at all important or that I was even, that I even mattered. I was not a happy camper because for me, God was only in a building. And that's when I understood that this step deals with spirituality, not religion. I found myself in the 12 and 12, page 32. This answer has to do with the quality of faith, rather than its quantity. This has been our blind spot. We supposed we had humility when really we hadn't. We supposed we'd been serious about religious practices when upon honest appraisal, we found that we'd only been superficial. Yes, that described me perfectly. And even when I had been around these rooms for the 2 years before January 2nd of 97, at no time was I asking what God's will was for me. Instead, I was always telling him what I thought he ought to do and a laundry list of all the things I needed. Rarely had I taken any accounting of my actions. Never made amends to people. Maybe occasionally. But, or given to or done for anyone without the expectation of recognition and acknowledgement. I was always begging and complaining. I love it in the 12 and 12 where it says, therefore, we remain self-deceived and so incapable of receiving enough grace to restore us to sanity. This book just tells my story over and over again. I could not have seen how irrational my choices were because I thought I had worked the program, but I could not have done that and still lived the way I did. Remember last week I talked about the wall? The wall that I always perceived was between me and the person I would want to be. Between who I was, how I hurt, the pain I had felt, the disappointment, all that stuff. I could see little peepholes through that wall occasionally to where I wanted to be. I had aspirations. I had inspirations sometimes. But the wall was in the way. And the ability to be able to see through the holes just kept moving. The wall was a place where I truly did not know that I didn't know, that I didn't have that understanding. Sanity in the 12 and 12 is defined as soundness of mind. And it was only in hindsight about my insane moments that I admitted, and even barely to myself, how absolutely unsound and warped my mind was. I would have never admitted culpability before I worked these steps. Responsibility. You know, I had done a fourth step in those couple of years, and I can't tell you what came out of it. I can't tell you if I felt anything, if I was relieved of the pressure. Must not have been, because I went back and kept on doing the same thing over and over again. By working these steps honestly, I was recovering from that seamlessly hopeless state of mind and body. And after identifying the problem and out of desperacy, I wanted a solution. I wanted to find what this secret power y'all had. This power that you say is greater than yourself. Now all I'm supposed to be able to do is just step back and let it happen. It sounds really easy, but it is a process that you need to go through in first the surrender and then the acceptance of powerlessness. From the big book, page 64, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and spiritually. In my case, because my addiction had begun so early, I had never truly had a connection with people that I trusted. My dad may have been the only person in my world, only because we were so similar. We were just the same personality. It was interesting because I could see his, not flaws, but his edges where he struggled. I could see when the anger would overcome him. I could see when his frustrations would just mount to the point where he'd lose it. Dr. Silkworth says, we need a psychic change and a spiritual awakening. In the doctor's opinion, it reads, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. Whew! Wow! I don't remember reading that back when in that big book at all. Page 46, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a bit of willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. That's how easy step two can be. It's all about seeking that power outside of ourselves without prejudice and judgment, and with willingness and acceptance. Step two, in all my study in here, is the most fully described step in the big book. With 25 dedicated pages, there are at least 12 descriptions of what a source greater than yourself is. Starting with power greater than yourself, the great reality, presence of God, our Maker, one who has all power, higher power, presence of infinite power and love, supreme being, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, realm of spirit and all powerful, and guiding source. And that's not to include, oh, Mother Earth, the sky, the ocean, and probably many, many more that have helped our various members to say yes with open-mindedness and surrender. Again, page 52 in the big book offers us, when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Such brilliance. Oh. In closing, I just kept finding myself everywhere in this big book and in this 12 and 12. So here's more of my truth out of the big book, page 53. When we became alcoholic, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? I've chosen my higher power because the test for me is that I have peace and contentment. I have love for myself today, which I am able to give away. And because I know that my sanity and my life depends on this relationship with my higher power. And so I ask, do you have yours? Thanks.
Thanks, Mary. So now we have time for questions from our audience. So if you have a question here in the room, raise your hand and we'll bring you the microphone. Or if you're on Zoom and you have a question, just go ahead and speak up. So who wants to get us started tonight?
Oh, good. No questions.
Mary, are you able to describe your higher power to us?
Sure. Thanks, Paige. My higher power is one that, for me, I see in the love of others. I see in smiles. I see in decisions being made. I see in kindnesses being expressed. I see in all of the world, including things that may not be favorable or may not be a happy scene. They are created for us to learn from, any opportunities that are not good. But my higher power, I can know and rest assured, gives us all life every day.
Who else would like to ask a question?
Thanks so much, Mary, for your deep dive. This is more of a personal question. When did you experience sanity returning for you? Was it early on in the step process, or, you know, when you got to done with your amends, or can you kind of expound on that a little bit?
When did I? Well, like I said, I had to establish sanity. I didn't know what that was. So I think it came when I began the process of surrender. I remember early on, after I was truly here and decided to stay, that somebody asked me what my favorite color was. And I didn't know. I said, rainbow. And they said, no, a color. And I remember back then, it was yellow or orange. I still couldn't absolutely, definitively tell you. But that's when the sanity. That sanity was a process. I got to say that I'm in a place in my recovery today that I certainly wasn't there 5 years ago. I definitely wasn't there even 10 years ago. It has been something that has bloomed, blossomed, emerged. Sometimes I'm thinking that when I know that my higher power is working in me is when my conscience is working. When something has happened and I need to make an amend, I need to pray about something, that's a part of the sanity. In knowing to let go of things sooner than I ever would have before. It's been a very gradual movement. And that's why, you know, I knew my higher power far sooner than I gained any sanity. I shared with you last week how my little guy, he'd know that I was out of sorts And he'd say, I think it's time to go to a meeting, Mom. Let's go to a meeting. Because I was comfortable and peaceful for that hour in a meeting, and then I'd get out of the meeting and go home, and old habits returned, and they were deeply ingrained. You know, I had a lot of pain, pain of my own making, because my life was wonderful. I had a lot of pain to have to overcome and acknowledge that had created the being that I am, that I'm a constant work in progress.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Who else has a question for Mary?
Hi, Mary. It's Jack. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jack.
Thanks so much for sharing tonight. So I think you said that the higher power is a personal journey. And so my question is, when you're working with others, what might be some of the things that you would suggest to them to assist them in that journey?
Good question. I've only had a couple of ladies that I've worked with that have struggled with the idea of higher power. Most women that I'd worked with and have worked with, even new ones, have some source. They have something. But there is that process that we work with to surrender to that. For those couple that I've worked with, you know, the idea is that I can't give them what I have. It has to originate from them. It has to be native to themselves. And like I said, I truly believe that all they need to have is an openness and willingness. And I trust the God of my understanding that will happen for them. That they will, I don't want to say that the Holy Spirit's going to descend upon them, but it's kind of like that, you know. In their own way, they will adopt something. It can be very obscure, but as long as they know that they don't have to have all the answers, and they don't have to know how absolutely to live their life minute by minute by minute, nor to guide other people's lives, then they will have found their higher power.
I'm Mary Gretchen, alcoholic. They keep stealing my questions. Anyhow. Oh, and by the way, I don't know, by a show of hands, I don't think you're alone in the whole throwing the brush and the dog food down the stairs thing at someone. Thank you. Yeah, because that made total sense to me. Anyhow, so one of the things, you know, when I first heard this talk about a psychic change, I didn't have an understanding as to what that was and thought like there was going to be like a medium psychic come in and help me make change. So how would you explain to somebody what a psychic change is?
Well, I guess that would be an explanation. It would be a conversation. Psychic change to me means personality change. It means different choices. Making different choices. It means surrendering preconceived notions that a higher power doesn't exist. A psychic change. I believe it's a change in our mind. You know, it's, you know, a miracle is just a shift in perception. That's all it is. I think of it as a sailboat. And, you know, you're going along, and all of a sudden the wind changes a little bit, and you know what you're heading for, but the wind changes just a bit, so you move to here. That 1 degree difference can change every single thing that you're looking at, that you're going to go by, that you're seeing. That's a psychic change, a change in attitude, perception, focus, that whole idea that we don't have a whole lot of control over that, but our higher power does. And I love the idea that we get a psychic change. You know, it for anybody not affiliated with the program, that can be a little scary, you know. They're afraid that the boogeyman's going to come down or something. But we are grateful that that's not the situation, that we know that we can... We have a kind and loving higher power. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for sharing again, Mary. It's I always enjoy hearing the walk through the literature because, after all, that's what we're about, isn't it?
Isn't it?
And here's my question. You know, as when I was new, and as I've sponsored people over the years and just being around, sometimes it seems there's a fair amount of conversation devoted to who's my higher power? What's my higher power like? I wish I had a higher power like yours and mine, you know. And what I'm wondering is this, you know, in this the pretty extensive discussion that you've given us, is there any importance to describing, identifying, or drawing a picture of a higher power? Or, you know, what's the bare bottom line on this, if you can share? I hope my question makes sense to you.
Thanks, Leslie. You know, yes, there is a fair amount of discussion that needs to be addressed with step two. But for those that understand, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't, then they're not going to get it. So, you know, it's not like I would ever give up. I would just implore that whoever might not have an understanding, they can borrow my higher power. I can describe it. I might draw a picture for them if they want it. They can take it home. Pull it out when they feel the need to control situations or decide to drink, they can pull it out. Eventually, God gets our attention here. I, without a shadow of a doubt, absolutely believe that. And all that I would ask is that they stay willing and open for whatever inspiration. I remember some guy saying in a meeting that he wore a scarf all the time, and that was his higher power that he carried with him. Okay. You know, if it's going to keep you safe, if it's going to keep you from picking up, I'm sure that's not the case a while down the road. But whatever it is, who are we to sit in judgment? That's what comes back to that personal decision about what works for us, how do we implement it, and that surrender. And then acceptance. The biggest thing is just to know that you're not your own higher power. And that sometimes is a really hard surrender for people to let go of. Well, you know, I've always taken care of myself and I've always been self-sufficient. Man, did I ever think that. And little did I know that all of that me attitude got me deeper and deeper and deeper into my hole. Till I'd been here and then I was like, no, I don't need it. Nothing's working for me. I'm miserable. I just want to die. Well, I had enough of this program to know, and with Fiona's help, brought me to that realization. I cannot do this by myself. I hurt too much. And if I pick up the phone and ask for help, then God, through that woman, is going to be at the end of that line. Yes.
Everybody in this row raised their hand at the same time.
Hi, Mary. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Bridget.
Thank you for your presentation today. I unfortunately missed last week, but so what I want to know is, when did you really believe that your life was insane? Because when I came into the rooms, I still didn't really understand that. I had a gift of desperation, but I didn't understand that I was insane. I thought everybody else was. So, they were doing things to me. Yeah. So I wondered. I don't know if what I'm saying is unique to anyone, but at any rate, I wondered, did you understand that you were insane?
No.
And I'm not trying. Let me rephrase that. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I didn't understand that restore us to sanity part. I just hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just heard it too. And like I said, there were years that I was here. That insanity was still a major part of my story. It doesn't matter at 37 years, Carolyn. Insanity still pops up, doesn't it? And at 25 years, I still get the better of myself. I still am frustrated, overwhelmed, angry. I have a family situation that I can't do anything about, and it just pulls on my heart constantly. And I just have to know, because I went insane over this whole situation, and I lived it, I worked it, I felt it. It was the first thing I thought of when I'd wake up in the morning. It was the last thing I went to bed with. I'd wake up in the middle of the night with it. And finally, I admitted insanity. So it doesn't matter how many years you got, you know? And it doesn't matter that I feel intensely close to my higher power. It's whether I decide that I think that I can change any situation. That's when I become insane again. I don't pick up. I'm not as mean as I used to be. I don't arm myself with a bag of dog food anymore. But I still, my mouth is my worst weapon. And I sit in justification sometimes of using it as such. Thanks.
You're laughing, Gretchen.
Do I have time? Yes. Stephanie, alcoholic.
Hi, Stephanie.
I don't have a question. Am I required to ask a question? Okay. I just have two comments.
Okay.
Well, that just came forth from things you said when you were just talking. I think it was Leslie's question and your response to that. I was reminded that, you know, there have been times when, you know, if I was working with somebody or in conversation with somebody and they're really struggling with the whole concept of higher power, you know, I would ask the question, I would say, do you think that you are like the be-all to end-all in this universe, the most powerful? And everybody's like, no, of course not. And I'm like, then leave it at that. That's all you need to know. You've just acknowledged that there's a power out there that's greater than you. You don't need to define it. You just need to be open to knowing that there's a power. And that's worked a lot. It just gives people pause like, oh, okay, and leave it at that. But the other thing, I was really intrigued by Gretchen's question about a psychic change because I'd never really thought about that. But I think myself and probably others had the same reaction to like, what do you mean by a psychic change? So when you asked that, I Googled it, right? I'm like, what's the definition of a psychic change? And I thought this was interesting. It said a psychic change gives you the ability to respond to life differently. It's the element in the 12 steps that is referred to as a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, or an attitude adjustment. All that is required is to take a simple attitude towards a higher power and take action on a few suggestions. And then they list eight signs that you had a psychic change. Sobriety, an open and willing heart, accepting wise counsel, new playgrounds and playmates, motivation to get active, acts of selflessness, change in old behavior, and a new sense of spirituality. Oh, that was a good definition.
That's all I have.
Thanks. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks, Steph.
I'll ask you a question. How old are you?
Old enough to know better most of the time.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.